Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Celtics Lab podcast. I'm your host for today, Cameron Pentavai, joined as always by Alex Fulberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. After a scrappy opening game to the series, Boston finds itself down 1-0 to the Brooklyn Nets. And to discuss this series in its entirety, we've brought on a special guest, Ajay Brown of NetsWire. Ajay, how are you? Welcome to the pod.
Hey, I'm honored to be on. Honestly, I'm great. After that first game one, we definitely have a preview of what to expect for the rest of the
Rub
series.
It in!
I didn't want it to be you guys to go up against the Nets first, but man, especially after that game by Tatum against the Wizards.
Are you a Nets fan by trade or just for this position?
I was growing up a Nets fan. Right?
Okay, cool.
And then I kind of moved to neutral, but just, you know, watching them win, I don't mind it at all.
Yeah, so. Old habits die hard. No. Yeah. We are very neutral about the Celtics on this podcast. Certainly, we are not hanging our hats on how well they do. Speaking of which, Alex, Dr. Quinn, how you doing?
Well, you know, I'm doing okay. I have to say, I think that the Celtics, despite the loss that they took in the kind of crappy second half, I really thought that they played a little better than I expected them to. So, You know, I'm doing fine.
Cool.
I've been enjoying this series so far. There's some good stuff that we could talk about that was really positive, that's worthwhile, you know?
You know, it's just really nice to have playoff basketball back. And after this horrible regular season, which has just felt like a slog for so long with all of these players missing time and just, you know, the kind of all of the like dubious ethical issues that we covered on previous pods about being an NBA fan. At the end of the day, the NBA playoffs are still the best playoffs of any sport, and it's really not even close. So it's just nice to have them back. Before I came on here, I was watching a really great battle between the Knicks and the Hawks, and the Knicks fans were just losing their minds. So it's nice to be back playoffs.
Yeah, let's keep keeping ourselves safe from COVID because I'm really liking having fans back. Friend of the pod, Spike Lee, seems to be enjoying himself very much. So, Ajay, we did bring you on to talk about the Nets and the Celtics, but we're going to save that for the lab portion of the programming. And first, we're just going to kind of go around the horn with some more Celtic-centric stuff, but we'd love your feedback on that. So, in the middle of the long-awaited postseason, let's talk about Summer League. Vegas Summer League is back. The draft will be July 29th, and hopefully that goes off without a hitch. Vegas Summer League will start shortly thereafter. Dr. Quinn, any thoughts?
Well, we actually do have some players. It would be good to see if there is any reason to reconsider hanging on to some of them. I know that a lot of them have played themselves out of the rotation in the postseason, so we may not see them again until Vegas Summer League. If we see them again... And we also have some younger players who are doing pretty well, and I'm excited to actually get some run against some competition that is, you know, not going to keep them on the bench.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, Jai, if the Nets are going to be big players in the summer league, but
yeah, I don't know how they're going to do in the summer league, but I don't expect it to be similar to any of the runs that they've been making in the regular season or dominance. But I do know that this draft class is going to be more different, as you mentioned.
Yeah,
that they're extremely talented. We have players that already play professionally in the G League. So just to see how they will gel in the summer league right after playing in the G League, specifically Jonathan Kuminga and Jalen Green, I want to see how that's going to look, if they're going to amplify their game and elevate their game in the summer league, or if they're going to slow down.
Yeah. I'm not ready to call it quits on this Celtics season, and certainly not this postseason, but I am pretty excited about the new crop of incoming rookies. I think that's going to be super fun. So let's work backwards. Summer league will be sometime, if you can believe it, during the summer. Supposedly there's going to be an Olympics. I don't know if it really will happen or ought to happen.
Yeah. But,
Fournier is going to play for France, which would be cool. His free agency impending. It would be nice to see how he does. I don't know if he's had enough time to fully recover from COVID. So I don't know if this data is from this playoff series is going to be telling enough, but the Olympics might be, but also maybe they shouldn't have the Olympics. So before we actually get into the series, just a few bookkeeping things, a few things that are petty and pointless and oh so fun to talk about. Danny Ainge said that he thought Kyrie really meant it when he said he was going to come back to Boston. And let's go around the horn and talk about that. I'll just throw into the ring that the commercial that he made with his dad is pretty convincing. Ajay, so you've been a Nets fan for a while. So seeing this was a few years ago now. Did you think Kyrie was going to re-sign with the Celtics when he was with the Celtics?
Not at all. I was all in on the D'Angelo Russell train, you know, Jared Allen train, you could call it, and the Spencer Dinwiddie train. Those are the players that we had at that time. But when Kyrie Irving said that he was coming to the Nets that summer, I was like, why us? Like, I thought he was happy with Boston. He did come off a year that he regretted because I believe you guys got bounced by the Bucks.
Yeah.
Like, that was sorry to bring back the memories, but that was a sad series. And knowing Kyrie, I thought he would have wanted to bounce back with the same squad, or if he really wants to play with KD that much during that summer, maybe try to recruit him to Boston. But then again, how would that work out with Tatum there, you know? So
Alex, let me ask you this. What do you remember thinking from that moment? The Bucks series was certainly something, but
yeah,
maybe this is revisionist history and the mood was a little different.
Well, my mood was very different up until the Bucks series. I really thought that Kyrie was going to resign for most of that year. But when that Bucks series happened, watching his kind of disengagement on the court, the fact that he was kind of deliberately hunting bad matchups, like explicitly trying to guard Giannis, that showed to me that he was not particularly enthused with staying on the Celtics for the foreseeable future. And, you know, Danny Ainge, so addressing Danny Ainge's comments, he mentioned that he was surprised, like myself, that Kyrie ultimately left for Brooklyn. And I have to say, you know, given that, trying to square that with Kyrie's comments from earlier a couple of weeks ago when he mentioned that he and Durant had this thing in the works for a while. If that's the case, if we're going to take Kyrie at his word there, and maybe, you know, with some collaborating evidence based on how they were hanging out at the All-Star game that year, but if we're going to take Kyrie at his word there, I don't think that speaks particularly well of Danny Ainge as a GM. Your whole job is to know what is going on with these players, to get a sense of where they're at and what they're going to want in free agency and try and build this team around them. If Danny Ainge didn't know that Kyrie was seriously considering forming a super team with Durant, if he was truly blindsided, I think that that's actually a kind of bad look. So I was a little surprised by those comments.
I'm surprised people keep asking about it and he keeps responding as if it's something to continue to talk about. Alex, perhaps you're right. Perhaps it reflects poorly on him, but you would think he would say, hey, we don't need to talk about it anymore. But to close the loop, I remember it being reported that they had been talking about this since the Rio Olympics when they were all on that boat because of the Zika virus. So this might have gone back a long time. I think players have agency, and I think Kyrie Irving is really good at changing his mind, so I don't really hold it against Ainge, but I am a little shocked that he continues to stoke the flames a little bit. Dr. Quinn, anything we missed from 2 years ago or today?
Well, I mean, as far as Danny talking about believing him, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't believe him. I mean, you can only go with what the players tell you. If you hear chatter that things are happening, then, you know, to your point, Alex, you can make a move. And this is me kind of talking the opposite of the thing that I usually do when it comes to Danny Ainge and star talent. I do think that at that point in time, it did make sense to gamble and to see if you could hold that whole core together for another season, come back and see what you could do. I don't know. I want to push back a little bit on that. I do have to agree that it is his job to do these things. But I'm curious to hear what Ajayi has to say about this from kind of an external perspective. Are we talking about this too much? Should we just let this go?
No, not at all. Like, I hear what you guys are saying, and I kind of put this question in my head for you guys. Would you guys rather the Celtics trade Jason Tatum if they had a chance at keeping Kyrie to learn Durant, or would you rather keep Tatum and bet on his future, but, you know, let go of Kyrie if you were put in that situation that Danny Ainge was in and actually knew about, like, for sure, like, since it's speculated, but actually knew that all this was happening behind the scenes?
Good question.
Alex didn't like the question. No, that's a really good question. I want to be really mindful of not letting what I know now about Jason Tatum color what we thought back then. So I would say if there was somehow a way to get Kyrie and Durant on the Celtics, 100 times out of 100, you do it. Because as good as Jason Tatum was and projected to be, I don't think we could have even predicted this. So I would have for sure looked for a way to keep Kyrie in Boston, bring Durant into Boston. I don't know that they're the type of players or business people that would be happy in Boston for a long time. It's a small place. Durant is 7 feet tall and a multimillionaire. There's not really that many places for him to live that lifestyle in private in Boston, whereas I think New York and Brooklyn, it's a little easier. So I'm not super shocked that you know, he picked San Francisco and then ultimately picked Brooklyn. But to really answer your question, yeah, 100 times out of 100, I would have taken that trade.
Yeah, no, I've always been really resistant to breaking up the promise of the Jays. And I don't know what I would have said at the beginning of the season, but if you asked me this question anytime past a midway point or so of the season, I probably would have just banked on Tatum because let me just put it this way. I was trying very hard to keep talking myself into wanting Kyrie to come back. And I knew it was the right thing from a basketball perspective, but his relationship with the media in particular has always been a very, very difficult one to parse. I mean, I know even for you Nets writers, it's been fairly difficult. I mean, he was like issuing statements for you guys at the beginning of this season. He's a difficult person to cover, you know? And I don't know. If it depends on when you asked me last season, because basketball brain says exactly 100 times out of 100, you get those two players on a team, you do it every time. But my gut feeling by mid-season was that Kyrie wasn't going to work out. And again, to say what you said earlier, coloring what I knew at the time, I probably still would have banked on getting Durant to Boston as well, because it's just, look at what he does, you know? But that said, I did have some qualms about the idea, and I've always had some qualms about breaking up the Jays ever since they've gotten on the team.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's so hard because you really do, to your point, Dr. Quinn, have to kind of go back to the mindset of where you were in 2018, not really this year. Because, like, obviously, you know, hindsight being what it is, like, of course you don't want to trade Jason Tatum. That dude's going to be a multiple-time All-Star and MVP candidate. At the same time, you know, Kevin Durant, that's probably one of the 15 best players who's ever played the game. If you have a shot to get Kevin Durant, you should almost certainly take the shot to get Kevin Durant. So what it comes down to for me is, would that have really even mattered? would getting Kevin Durant to Boston have mattered as much to Kyrie as, say, going to Brooklyn with another star player like Anthony Davis, who was also available at the time and who Brooklyn almost certainly could have acquired, you know, with the right trade assets? If for Kyrie, it was more about being closer to home, to New Jersey, to the Nets fans and all that, which I suspect had a pretty heavy part in this, yeah, then I think that the answer to that question has to be no. So once again, it really comes down to like what's going on in Kyrie Irving's head, which is the most difficult question that NBA GMs have had to answer for many, many years now.
Well, let's fast forward because we know that the Celtics did not make that trade. And we know that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving ended up in Brooklyn. And someone named James Harden is also playing in Brooklyn. And recently, Coach Brad Stevens had this to say ahead of the Celtics matchup against the Nets. If I'm just a general fan of the NBA, I have a hard time seeing them lose. We're going to have to play great. I think that Brad Stevens knows a thing or two about the media, and we can talk about that in just a second. I'm going to throw in someone's response. So anyone who listened to the podcast last week knows that I do a really good Marcus Smart impression. So here's my Kendrick Perkins impression. Brad Stevens, if you love Brooklyn that much, why don't you go coach them? Go join the coaching staff. Listen, I played for the Boston Celtics for 8.5 years. I know the definition of the city of champions. They have something called Celtic pride. That wasn't Celtic pride. So, Jai, you can just sit back and smile while Boston has a meltdown. Alex or Dr. Quinn, I thought for sure that this Stevens quote was a nothing burger, but either one of you, what do you think? What do you think of what Perk said? And then we have Joe Tsai, who has something he pitched in on Twitter. One of you can share.
It is a nothing burger, Cam. You are absolutely right on that. In fact, it is even more nothing than a nothing burger. I have heard coaches say something to this effect about their playoff opponents 9 billion times in my NBA fan career. This is so utterly irrelevant. And once again, it's just a case of Perk or whoever it might be, Gary Tanguy or whatever, some Boston media dipshit injecting themselves to get in on a story that isn't a story just so that they can hear their name go around the news cycle. I have to say, as a Celtics fan, there have been a lot of things that have been frustrating about this season, but none of them have been more frustrating than Boston media taking every single thing said by a member of this team or by a coach or by a GM and blowing it up to be this meltdown level crisis event. Please, please shut the fuck up. I'm begging you.
About that whole Kyrie Irving leaving thing, I won't even go there. But I do agree. The Boston media is a particularly harsh light. They expect a lot of their players. And when you throw in some clickbait generation, it can create a perfect storm of, I don't even know how to say it. It's just an awful uncouth thing to deal with. Uncouth. Yeah, there you go. It's quite uncouth. It's I think we can cover sports in a way that doesn't kind of go to the like most like common denominator type, you know, clickbaity stuff. And I understand that Perk needs to establish himself, and he's doing a pretty good job. He got a cover, I think it was Sports Illustrated, specifically for these kinds of takes. And, you know, if it's working for him, I understand why it's happening. But I do think that sports media journalism is at its best when it gets you to engage with the product because it's actually interesting, not because it's generating the outrage machine.
Justin, you said that you weren't going to go there, but I am going to go there. So you're a sports media venture, like, and you're dedicated to talking shit about whatever anybody is saying on the Boston Celtics organization, et cetera, et cetera. And then you act just baffled, just so confused when star players decide, actually, I'm going to go somewhere else where I don't have to listen to me being slandered on talk radio every day. It's like, what are you doing? What do you expect is going to happen? These dudes listen to that shit. Like, they don't just live in a vacuum. They hear all of that bullshit. It's no fucking wonder that people leave Boston. Like, what are we doing here? You know, I just... I keep seeing this coverage about how like Jason Tatum isn't a leader. It's like, all right, well, this dude is doing literally everything he possibly can in the worst possible situation to try and win games. And if Jason Tatum, God forbid, leaves the Boston Celtics in the next 4 years when his contract is up, what could we expect? You know, exactly. If you hear somebody talking shit about you every day for 4 years, you probably don't want to be around that person. So I'm sorry. I'm a little drunk very tired of all of this nonsense, but it's just, this is what happens. And this is why players leave. Now, Kyrie, I'm sure, had plenty of reasons for leaving the Celtics that didn't involve Boston talk radio, but man, just relax, just stop.
This is probably a podcast for the off season. And hey, Jai, how you doing? I think we're going to transition to talk about the series itself. I would hazard, though, if you're a top professional athlete and you can't handle shock jockeys in Boston, you can't handle any major media market because it's not a Boston problem. And the media doesn't owe anything to Jason Tatum. If he's not playing up to snuff, they should call it. I don't believe the coverage was fair this season. We've talked about this before. Jason Tatum had COVID. Everyone on the Celtics had COVID. So to pound them into the sand makes no sense and is not particularly fair or smart. But let's pick this conversation up over the offseason because there's a lot of meat on these bones. I will offer before we transition to talk about the series that Joe Tsai said of Brad Stevens' comments. If you believe in the easy kill, you're being set up by the wily Danny Ainge Stevens ploy. Don't believe none of it. Because maybe Brad Stevens is just using the media to talk to his guys. Now, speaking of what Brad Stevens was talking about in the first place, there is a series of basketball being played. And if we have time at the end, we'll go around the horn and talk about kind of all the other series. But while we're talking about apparently this fatalist Celtics-Nets series, we might as well get into the nitty-gritty. So, Jai, you saw, as we all did, that the Celtics kind of blitzed the Nets early on. One, Rob Williams had a particularly good game. We'll talk about that. But then the team from Brooklyn seemed to close up shop pretty easily to win game one. What did you see from that game? What do you like from the Nets' perspective? What do you like from the Celtics' perspective?
Oh, man. Honestly, there were some things that I was kind of confused on for Boston's end, the offense. I was kind of confused as to like what the problem was. Was it that Brooklyn's defense has amplified and improved so much in such a short time between the season and now to hold you guys to 93 points or the Celtics to 93 points? And also I wanted the Celtics to kind of take advantage more in that first quarter when the Nets were starting off cold. However, I feel like during that that time period, the Celtics didn't take that much advantage, and as a result, Brooklyn was able to easily come back into the game and easily push their lead up to double digits in the third quarter. What I can say I liked about Brooklyn was the fact that they weren't really depending a lot on, I guess you can say, offense from the big three until Durant was like, okay, I want to shoot. He started to shoot more shots and towards the end or the second half, although he was cold, but you can tell like the option was to not really depend on them in the first half, but until the second half came. But honestly, it wasn't the perfect game for the Nets either. But.
Yeah. From a Celtics perspective, without Jaylen Brown, I mean, it's a matter of when, not if. And I think, and Dr. Quinn, I'm going to swing this to you because I know you wrote about this, that the Time Lord, Robert Williams, was a real thing to enjoy from that series, or from that game rather. His stat line in 23 minutes, 11 points, 9 rebounds, and a franchise record, 9 blocks. And when I tell you I checked 3 different times to make sure that I was putting that on paper correctly, because I didn't see the final box score last night. Goodness me. So, Dr. Quinn, tell us about what you saw from Robert Williams specifically. And Ajay is suggesting that the Nets have a lot more that they could put together. What do you think about that?
I think he's absolutely right. I think it's a shame they didn't take advantage of that early lull, but really, I don't think there's a good defined role. You know, Kemba Walker spent the entire season trying to learn how to defer a bit more to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and then suddenly now he has to do the opposite again. And, you know, he's shined in moments when it's clicked for him, but it's kind of like now he's not used to it. And, you know, I think if, you know, I'm a little off the rails already here, and talking about Time Lord, but there was definitely some opportunities for the Celtics early on, but I mean, everybody was cold, including Jason Tatum. We can talk about that more in a minute. Not starting Time Lord seemed very odd to me. I didn't think he was going to play, you know, even though they said that he was available. And then he came out and it was just, I have never seen him play that well. That was definitely easily, in my opinion, his best game as a Celtic. It's not fair to expect something like a historic performance from anyone on a regular basis. But seriously, though, this bodes very well for the future as long as he is, and this is important, healthy. No one has had a performance like that in not only the history of the franchise, but that was the fastest 9-block performance ever in the history of the NBA.
That
was just really impressive. He was just like, he wasn't just hunting blocks, he was hunting shutting people down, which is a very different thing than what he has done in the past. He came out and swallowed Claxton alive. He ate.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Harden's lunge, follow him out to the perimeter, and just like, nope, you are not shooting that shot. You know, I realized that this was all, you know, adrenaline, and, you know, he said that it helped cover his turf toe. Hopefully that continues. I am frankly surprised they didn't rest him with a break between the games entirely for this game. But yeah. I mean, really, he was the takeaway. He was the takeaway from this game for Celtics fans. He is got to be part of the future, or if he isn't going to be part of the future moving forward, if for some reason they do trade him, you had better get a damn good player back because he is going to be amazing.
Alex, I believe you have thoughts on Kemba Walker, so you can respond to whatever for Justin just said, but then I know you have some thoughts. And then Ajay, I'm going to go to you.
Well, I also have some thoughts as the initial captain of the Start Rod bus on this podcast. You know, I was thrilled to see Robert Williams play as well as he did. And I mean, he's just such an exciting player to watch when he's locked in like that. You know, I think as to why he didn't start, I do think that the turf toe and the minutes restriction was the major factor there. I think if Rob were 100% healthy, it wouldn't be a question as to whether he's starting or not. And I also think there's actually something to be said for Tristan being kind of the starter in name only of sorts. He did play reasonably well in that game. And more importantly, with the potent offense that the Celtics are going against in Brooklyn, there's going to be so many fouls that they're going to have to deal out to stop them. And the case for starting Tristan is basically to come in and absorb those two quick fouls that you know is going to come right off the bat, and then throw Rob in and protect him a little more. So I can sort of see why they started him. But it's clear to me that Robert Williams is the best big on this team and has been for some time, and absolutely should at a minimum be closing games. Mm-hmm. As far as his minutes, we'll see how that goes. I mean, turf toe is really, really painful. That is not a fun injury to have if you are like me and 6 feet tall, let alone 6'8" and jumping out of the building. So I can't even imagine the amount of pressure that's going on to his foot right now, and that's got to suck. That being said, you know, Celtics, their backs are firmly against the wall against a team that I had going to the finals at the beginning of this season. So they're going to need every minute that they can get from him. As far as Kemba, I mean, that's just kind of been the story of Kemba Walker's season. There have been times when he's looked really good and he's gotten into a rhythm and he's helped the team a lot. There's been a lot of times where he has really not looked very good, where he has looked like a medium to kind of poor quality starting point guard in the NBA. And you look at the stats without watching the game last night and you say, oh, well, Kemba didn't have a great game, but he wasn't awful. Well, Kemba scored 8 of his points of his, I think, 15 points. He scored 8 of those points when the game was well out of reach in garbage time. He just decidedly did not make an impact on the game at all. And it's one thing if you have a point guard who doesn't make an impact on the game and that player is Peyton Pritchard or Carson Edwards, a guy who comes in and maybe they'll give you 20 minutes, maybe they won't. It is entirely another thing when your starting point guard on a max contract comes in and gives you that kind of a performance in the environment of the playoffs. So I don't know. I think the biggest question for the Celtics this offseason is, what are you going to do with the Kemba Walker situation? And I just don't think that there's an easy answer at this point.
Yeah, to close that loop, Kemba was a game worse, minus 21 for his plus minus at the end of the night. So, Ajay, it doesn't sound like we're pretty confident the Celtics have a chance to win this series, but from your perspective, from the Nets side of the street, what ways could you see the Celtics winning a few games? Either things that they do correctly or things Brooklyn does incorrectly?
If that's a great question. If Robert Williams could become the Kembe Mutombo for, let's say, 3 more games, 4 more games.
Yeah.
That run together, okay. Then he'll handle the work defensively. If Kemba Walker could wake up, Alex, you pointed out that he just doesn't wake up during the playoffs. This kind of reminded me of that series last year against the Raptors when I didn't really see Kemba Walker show up when it was time for him to show up. Mm-hmm. That may be something that he needs to tap into now, because if you're going to do it against the Nets and do it one time, your confidence is just going to go through the roof. So if he could get that going in game 2 and then come to a crowded Boston crowd for the first time in a long time and perform well, you guys could be up 2-1 in the series, and that's the best chance to win it all. I meant win it all, win the whole series. But once you beat the Nets, you're proving to the league that, okay, we're capable of beating anybody because of all the talent that the Brooklyn Nets possess. And I just want to point out that Robert Williams, he caused attention from Nets fans, and Nets fans apparently want him now. So I'll say just be careful with him. Be careful with him, Boston.
Seriously.
Yeah, this is not the series to ruin his future, just to win a game or two. Justin and Alex, between Aaron Nesmith, Pritchard, Jabari, these kind of unbelievable role players, the players that, for better or for worse, are going to need to make an impact, who do you have your eye on most, and who do you think might actually come through and help the Celtics maybe win a game?
It's got to be Aaron Nesmith. I just think that, you know, the best case scenario for Aaron Nesmith is probably the highest ceiling of any one of those guys. He is such an aggressive crasher on the glass. He really didn't look that bad defensively either, which I was really impressed by. And he can hit outside shots and space the floor. And, you know, if he can do all of those things, if Nesmith can put together a starting caliber performance in this series, I do think there's a window for the Celtics to maybe steal a game or two. But it's a huge ask of a guy who had a shortened offseason coming off an injury and really didn't look like an NBA player until basically last month. That being said, if Nesmith is able to put together a couple of good games, that really raises the ceiling for what the Celtics are capable of. They need one more guy who can consistently hit an outside shot, relieve pressure on Jason Tatum, and force the defense to kind of play them honestly. And if he can be that guy, that's a great sign for Boston.
I feel like you are selling Nesmith short a little bit with his defense. He covered all three of Brooklyn's stars last night and managed to force at least two of them into misses. I mean, some of it was probably, you know, just the luck of averages. But I mean, not getting completely punked by some of the best players in the world is a pretty impressive thing considering that he was on national television. I'm very happy with his performance in that particular regard. It might end up causing us to end up seeing him on another team in the near future, potentially as soon as this offseason, if we believe some of the things that Danny Ainge is talking about on New England Sports Radio. But I think more than anything, what surprised me the most about the supporting cast was that Fast PP disappeared so much. I mean, he basically just was out there. Just, I know he got completely swallowed up by KD the last time they played. No, the first time they played this season. And that might kind of be, you know, mentally scarring a bit. But I do think he's going to show up a bit more than he has so far. Even if he's just hitting the occasional outside shot from deep. He seems to be pretty good at doing that regardless of the moment. And what about Jabari Parker? I mean, like, what was going on there? It was quite the surprise to see him in the game, never mind being pretty decent for stretches.
Yeah, I mean, Pritchard only logged 7 minutes. Jabari ended up playing 22. I mean, this Nets team is big. It's switchy. Outside of, I mean, Kyrie and Harris, I mean, it's a long team. And I wonder if that was Stevens's thinking, was maybe he didn't like what he saw from Pritchard, so he logged fewer minutes, or maybe he liked that Jabari was a big body and had six fouls to give. He hung around. I mean, he's played really competitive basketball before. Nerlens Noel, concurrently as we're recording this podcast, is playing really meaningful playoffs minutes, so you never know. Ajay, just as a basketball fan, I mean, are you rooting for Jabari? Are you confused by Jabari? What do you think when you see Jabari Parker in 2021 making impacts in the postseason?
I love it. Jabari Parker was one of my favorite plays in his draft class. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember what year it was, but he was projected to be the next big thing.
Right.
Playing alongside Giannis didn't work out. Okay. I believe the Bulls gave him another chance. Didn't work out. Okay. I believe he went over to the West Coast for one trip too. I believe.
He was in the Kings for a little bit.
Yeah, the Kings, they don't work.
Wizards for a cup of coffee as well.
And if he could find that luck playing for the Celtics, that would be great for not just the Celtics, but the basketball world in general, because yeah, we've seen injuries literally make his career what it is right now. So if he could define himself as someone else, like how Derrick Rose has done for himself because of injuries, he's became a reliable point guard off the bench for the Knicks. If Jabari Parker could carve out a role for the Celtics and somehow just be utilized for something that's really important in game, not like I don't expect him to do what he used to do back in the day. Right. I just want him to be one of those pieces that the Celtics can have that can stretch the floor. He can go work in the inside, perhaps draw more fouls. He definitely has a lot more potential still left in him. So just happy.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's the takeaway for the Celtics, is if everyone can walk away healthy, that's great. If players like Jabari, Tristan Thompson, a few others can boost their profile for the good of the game or for a future trade, that's great. And if Nesmith and Pritchard and even Tatum, who is still 23 years old, can get a little bit of burn and some more playoff minutes under their belt, I think that's radically important. And given all the crap the Celtics went through this year, honestly, like, a perfectly fine outcome. So,
listen, man, as long as Jabari is getting minutes, it means that Semi Ojeleye is not getting minutes. And that's all that I can hope for.
What's the problem with him?
Semi.
How much time do you have?
Yeah. I just, my thing with Semi is his whole deal was like being a really sound and strong defensive player. And for a while, he was pretty solid at that. And now he does the thing where Semi, in order to get into good guarding position to stop drives, will do these like furious chop steps to like get himself and his gigantic chest in the way of whatever is coming at him. And the problem with doing that is now it's a jump shooting league. And when Semi is chop stepping in the lane, that means that a shooter is open for another half second and he just can't close out. I can go on a whole Semi Ojeleye rant, but this dude has lost seemingly every ability that made him an NBA player.
Salta, Alex is going to run Semi Ojeleye out of town. Let's do this. Let's close by just taking a quick walk around the rest of the NBA, because certainly that will be relevant for the Nets, and it might be relevant for Celtics fans as they tune their attention to other teams. So I'll just breeze through kind of where the league is at, although not every game will have been played by the time we're done recording this. And certainly in the Eastern Conference, if we have any thoughts, let's chime in. Portland beat Denver behind a pretty great Carmelo Anthony performance. I think that's the big takeaway, but any thoughts on that one in no particular order?
It's going to be really hard for Denver to win that series if Jokic plays as well as he did and they still lose that game.
I agree 100%. But also Portland is forcing him to score the ball. If Jokic has one cold shooting game, they're already blocking off all the passing lanes for him. He only had about like 6 assists. He averaged about like 9-10 a game. Let's see. Good luck to Denver. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, man. The Blazers are surging at exactly the right moment. I don't expect them to win the series, but I'm starting to second guess my initial assessment of that series.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I'll take your answers in the opposite order. Portland has a lot riding on this postseason. If they have an early exit, I think that there will be changes, if not on the sideline, on the roster. And another team that has a lot riding on this postseason is the Los Angeles Clippers, but they just lost to Dallas. Jai, what do you think?
Why is it
good night, Irene, or it's just one game?
It's going to get worse for the Clippers. JJ Redick is on his way back. Lucas still needs to tap in more to his potential in this playoff series. And KP, I pray Kristaps Porzingis stays healthy for this series so we can get a great competitive series, because the Mavericks can beat them if the Clippers continue to play with this less urgency. You know, they weren't playing with that much urgency yesterday. I don't know if that's what you guys saw also.
I'm going to go the opposite direction. I think the Clippers are still very much in this series. The Clippers are such a weird and enigmatic team, and they're prone to these strange slumps. But when that team is at their best, they're really freaking hard to beat. And I really don't think that Kawhi is going to go out in the first round like that. So I'm sticking with the Clips.
Yeah, well, it's worth pointing out that last year the Lakers lost all of the first games and all of the series that they played before the finals. So let's continue to wring our hands as we go through the rest of these games, but let's keep that in mind. Speaking of last year's playoffs, Milwaukee and Miami are playing again in this year's playoffs, and Milwaukee beat Miami 109-107 in overtime, and Giannis was just the best. I'm so excited for Giannis to continue to be like a presence in my life, and I really want him to win a Larry Obi. Anyone on that series, thoughts, predictions, Alex?
I think that was a huge gut check win for the Bucks, and I think it's actually going to be very important for them for the rest of this playoffs. The Bucks really need to come out of this first round having won a battle-tested, hard-fought series against Miami. I think that that will actually make them a better and more threatening team to go through the ringer against a really tough, well-coached playoff opponent. And I think if the Bucks can beat Miami, I actually think that they would pose a very serious threat to Brooklyn in the second round.
Jai, what do you think?
I actually want to take the other side for this one. I think it's over for the Milwaukee Bucks. What I saw from game one was that, okay, Miami's not even at home yet, right?
Yeah. And
Goran Dragic was their leading scorer throughout the playoffs until they got to the finals and he got hurt. But when I saw Dragic yesterday playing in that same type of form he was playing in last year, I was like, okay, this is scary for the Bucks for game two and game three, because Jimmy Butler is still going to be there. Bam Adebayo had a bad shooting game when he was taking that jump shot, like near the free throw line. He kept resorting to that. He can make that. He showed us that this season. So if he starts hitting that, Jimmy Butler starts playing like Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic plays like him, you know, like his playoff form from last year. He still got Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, Trevor Ariza, which is a great piece for Miami. I don't think Milwaukee could get past the Heat in the first round, although I like how Chris Middleton played last night, and I like the addition of Jrue Holiday, but I'm looking at the depth. I don't think the depth of the Bucks will match up with the Heat.
I think that's a really good point, that this was at times the best that I think the Bucks could play, and they weren't really able to put the Heat to bed. But that said, the Heat also had a ton of COVID issues, so maybe they're better than their record would suggest. Philadelphia beat Washington in a game. I really don't like talking about the refs. I think it cheapens the breakdown, but the reffing was making it hard to enjoy the game in rhythm. But Philly did beat Washington, so they're one up on the Wizards. Any thoughts on that game? Anyone catch that one? That was earlier today.
I was able to catch the end.
Yeah. But
all I saw was that one call made by the ref for Westbrook's foot on the line.
Mm-hmm.
In real time, it looked like it was out of bounds. But when I saw the replay, his heel wasn't really on the line. It was just above it. Well, that's just my perspective. However, I'm not really on the refs for making that call for the Sixers and saying it was Sixers ball, because it was really, really,
really close.
I caught the very end of that game. You know, honestly, Washington just doesn't strike me as much of a challenge for Philly. I think they're going to cruise in that series. Wake me up when Philly gets into the second round is how I'm approaching them.
Yeah, the roster design that Philly put together is starting to come into its own. I thought that was pretty fascinating. This is an off-season topic, but they need to figure out the replay stuff. I think when you're playing the game, a 1.5 minute delay doesn't feel that long, but as a fan, it's just excruciating, and I really want them to rethink that workflow, but that's a different conversation. Phoenix beat Los Angeles, the Lakers, this afternoon. Chris Paul really only had the ability to use one arm, and he still got it done. Devin Booker was a revelation, and LeBron was good, not great, and Anthony Davis was probably not even good. I'm really curious about that one. Alex?
The Suns' defense was outstanding today. That was the big takeaway I had from that game. I mean, they were rotating. They were attacking the ball handler. They were making life really, really difficult for everybody in the Lakers to get into rhythm. And they did a nice job harassing LeBron. And then on the other end, you know, every time Devin Booker sees Andre Drummond in pick and roll, that's game time. That's barbecue chicken, as Shaq would say. I think the Suns turned in an outstanding performance to start this series off. And I think they put some real pressure on the Lakers. This is going to be a dogfight. And I think this is going to end up being the most competitive series of this first round as a result.
Yeah. Dr. Quinn?
Did not catch the game, but did not expect that outcome. Though, to be fair, as you pointed out earlier, the Lakers did lose every first game of every series they played last season. So I'm curious to see how it unfolds. I do think that Phoenix has what it takes to beat the Lakers in their current state, but if they can kind of find their path again after, you know, being shaken up a little bit by injury late in the season, I think we could have a pretty good series here.
Ishai, any thoughts on Lakers-Phoenix?
Yeah, for sure. DeAndre Ayton, monster game.
Yeah, yeah.
23 points and 14 boards.
I think it was 15, maybe, something like that.
Whew. What a big game from him. He outshined Anthony Davis, his matchup. He outshined Andre Drummond, and he outshined Montrezl Harrell. All big men that play for the Lakers that are supposed to be, you know, better than DeAndre Ayton. Devin Booker, that was our first look at him in the playoffs, and Like you said, Cam, that was a revelation what we witnessed. And that was just his first game in the playoffs with CP3 supposed to kind of like show him the ways of the playoffs. That's how we all expected it to be. But with that injury, Devin Booker just stepped up and he was like, okay, I don't care if it's LeBron and the Lakers, I have to help my Phoenix team that made it to the second seed this season. I have to get them past this round. And I believe it's definitely going to be a crazy series, but I also have concerns about the Lakers offense because they can't really space the floor. And it actually made it easier for the Suns to defend them. When you have a player like Andre Drummond and Montrezl Harrell, they're not spacing out the floor. And Kyle Kuzma kind of mentioned earlier in the season that he wants Marc Gasol to come in the game because it helps his game better. But, you know, that's a decision for only Frank Vogel to make.
I do have to say, we can't leave this game without talking about the fight. Campaign getting ejected for getting form tackled by Montrezl Harrell just makes absolutely no sense. I get that he threw the ball. I get that he was being kind of pissed off. But the Lakers were beating the crap out of Phoenix that whole game. And this is the playoffs, people. Come on. Let's let the people play. And then if we're going to eject someone, maybe eject Trez for being a fucking middle linebacker and taking this dude out for no reason.
I think he tripped. It looks like he tries to get to the spot and then is surprised at how hard he hits Campaign. But no, I do agree.
I was not a tech for pain, though. Because yeah. I became the second.
Yeah. I mean, you're not supposed to throw the ball. I think that that's by the book, but I agree.
That's definitely the first tech, but
the second one, I'm not.
He got hit.
Yeah. I do think that it's on with Chris Paul and LeBron right now. Like, those guys are friends off the court, but they are not friendly right now. I saw that little cheap shot that Chris Paul snuck in on that free throw rebound when he kind of yanked LeBron's arm. And I think that was not so subtly revenge for LeBron cranking onto his arm earlier in that game. So
it was reminiscent of our good friend Kelly Olynyk. It was really a sight to behold. The Knicks and the Hawks, rather, right now are playing a brilliant game. And we'll see Memphis and Utah later tonight. So Ajay Brown, who writes for Nets Wire, go check him out. We'll get you out of here on this. What team in the East as representative of the Nets are you most worried about?
You said represented by the East, that are in the East?
Yeah, a team in the East.
Sixers. And Embiid is a monster in the paint. There is literally no answer that the Nets have for him other than, you know, just make it difficult, send a double, make him make someone else make a play. That's the only option the Brooklyn Nets have for Embiid.
Well, I suppose best of luck to you, but maybe not. I don't really know. But like I said, Ajay Brown, he writes for Nets Wire. You can, when the Celtics season is put to bed, you can go shift your attention to all of the wonderful work he's doing over there. Thanks so much for coming on. It was so good chatting with you. And hey, maybe if the season goes on longer than expected, we'll have to do this again.
For sure, for sure. And thank you guys for having me, man.
Good time.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.